Hop Coast City Council meeting. It is 9 a.m. It is Tuesday, March 21st, 2017. Please join me in the pledge of flag.
United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Mayor Holland?
Here.
Vice Mayor Nobile?
Here.
Councilmember Cuff?
Here.
Councilmember Clufus is excused. Councilmember Shipley?
Here.
Thank you. I'll entertain a motion to approve the minutes of March 7, 2017, City Council business, and March 14, 2017, City Council workshop.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Motion and seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Seeing none, it passes unanimously. We will now move on to proclamations. Agenda item number 2, a proclamation recognizing March 13, 2017 through March 17, 2017 as Flood Safety Awareness Week. I believe Denise Bevan is going to be presenting this morning.
Accepting. Yeah.
Whereas floods can happen anytime, anywhere, and without warning, and whereas flooding creates emergencies of great concern to the city of Palm Coast with imminent threat to life and property and can cause hundreds of millions of dollars in damage to homes, businesses, and local government infrastructure, and whereas the city of Palm Coast has been in the National Flood Insurance Program since February 4, 2002, and whereas the City Council of the City of Palm Coast has adopted a unified land development code that governs flood damage protection, and whereas the City of Palm Coast has recently experienced a hurricane, Hurricane Matthew, October 2016, and whereas the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, National Weather Service offices and partner agencies have designated March 20th through March 26th as Flood Safety Awareness Week for 2017 as part of their seasonal safety campaign, and whereas damage from a flood is not normally covered under a standard homeowner's policy, residents are encouraged to review their flood risk and purchase flood insurance to protect their property from flood. And whereas the City Council of the City of Palm Coast concurs that to have a public that is well informed of the dangers associated with flooding can improve its preparedness and reduce the occurrence of death and injury as a result of severe flooding. Now, therefore, be it proclaimed that the City Council of the City of Palm Coast does hereby designate March 20th, 2017 through March 26th, 2017 as City of Palm Coast Flood Safety Awareness Week. Signed this 21st day of March 2017, Melissa Holland, Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Cuff. Thank you, Council Members, Mayor. I'm joined today with some of our floodplain management team members, and I want to thank you for this proclamation and your ongoing support for floodplain management to help reduce the risk of flood in our community. In addition to the National Flood Insurance Program, the city has also participated in the Community Rating System, or CRS, that encourages floodplain management activities that exceed minimum requirements. It serves as an incentive program that results in discounted premium rates for our citizens. There are 10 community classes in the CRS. Class 1 communities have the largest premium credit. Class 10 receive no premium discount. Over the last 15 years, the City of Palm Coast has gradually improved its CRS rating. In May 2004, achieved a Class 7. In May 2009, Class 6. And most recently, November 2014, a Class 5, which yields a 25% discount for special flood hazard area high-risk properties and 15% for properties not in a special flood hazard area lower risk. We currently rank in the top 10% of participating Florida communities and continue to strive to improve our rating. A significant portion of these communities involve educating the public about flood risk. The floodplain management team has dedicated this Friday to be Flood Friday at City Hall. Citizens are encouraged to come in at their leisure and meet with a certified floodplain manager from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Through social media, utility mailers, Flood Friday, and other outreach activities, our team wants to make sure our citizens are flood aware. Once again, thank you so much.
Thank you to Denise and your team for all your hard work. We really do appreciate it. And on behalf of also the residents of Palm Coast, it is really important to help them understand. So thank you. We'll now move to agenda item number 3, which is a proclamation, which Vice Mayor Nobile will be giving, a proclamation recognizing April as Water Conservation Month. I believe Brian Matthews is presenting today.
Thank you. Morning, Council, Mayor. Whereas water is a basic and essential need for every living creature, and whereas the state of Florida, the St. Johns River Management District, and other water management districts, and the city of Palm Coast are working together to increase awareness about the importance of water conservation, and whereas the city of Palm Coast and the state of Florida has designated April, typically a dry month, when water demands are most acute, Florida's Water Conservation Month to educate citizens about how they can help save Florida's precious water reserves. And whereas the City of Palm Coast has always encouraged and supported water conservation through various educational programs and special events. And whereas every business, industry, school, and citizen can make a difference when it comes to conserving water. And whereas every business, industry, school, and citizen can help by saving water and thus promote a healthy economy and community, and whereas the City of Palm Coast is participating in the 5th Annual National Mayor's Challenge for Water Conservation and encourages all residents to take the pledge online at www.mywaterpledge.com during the month of April. Now, therefore, be it proclaimed, the City Council and the City of Palm Coast, Florida, does hereby declare the month of April as Water Conservation Month, signed this 21st day of March, 2007. Melissa Holland, Mayor, City of Palm Coast.
Thank you so much. Mayor, Council, on behalf of the residents of Palm Coast, we would like to thank you for your continued support of this conservation effort, and it's very important to the future of Palm Coast that we continue to do so. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay.
Okay, we'll do
Again, thank you, Mr. Matthews, for your continued efforts. It is critical that we continue to find ways to conserve water in the city of Palm Coast. It's not only beneficial to today, it's beneficial in the future. So thank you. Agenda item number 4 is a presentation of our utility awards.
Mayor, City Council, this is something that we all can be very proud of. It's quite a photograph of national, state, and regional awards we've gotten in our community from our utility. This is from peers and regulators. So, you know, a lot of people haven't a clue as to what's going on behind the scenes, but the people who look under the hood at our utility recognize this every year, so even at the national level. Cindy's going to make the presentation.
All right. Well, my utility people, come up here. I told them to bring people.
Bring the crew.
They promised me that we have plenty of people running the plants right now, so no concern there. Why don't you guys stand here in this area, since there's so many of you. Come on up. All right. Well, as you all already know, the Palm Coast Utility Department provides excellent water and wastewater service to the citizens of Palm Coast, and that level of excellence has been recognized again and again. This year, I was working with Brian Matthews on the annual water quality report that comes out in May, and we decided on what our main story was going to be, and so I started doing the research and found out that over the past 40 years, our utility department and its precursors have received 86 awards, and those are local, regional, state, well, I guess they're not really local, regional, state, and national awards. And there was actually a spreadsheet, and we had to do kind of a little bit of work on it to make sure we had captured them all, and they come from all sorts of different agencies, including our regulator, which is the Florida Department of Environmental Protection. So in 2016, the tradition continued with us being award-winning, and today we want to do a presentation on the awards that we received in the past year. So we're going to start on the wastewater side. The wastewater treatment plant staff received a second-place safety award from the Florida Water Environment Association for both our safety training, our preventive practices, and our safety record in 2016. The Florida Water Environment Association works to make historic differences in the advancement of water environment science and technology and is the leading professional water organization in Florida. So that's the first award. And I think we'll just go through all the awards and then do one photo up together, if that's okay with everybody. The wastewater staff also earned the 2016 Plant Operations Excellence Award from the Florida Department of Environmental Protection, which I had mentioned before is our regulatory agency from the state of Florida. This award is based on operation, maintenance, innovative treatment, pollution prevention, recycling, and other criteria. Over the years, the wastewater treatment plant and our three water treatment plants have collectively earned 32 Plant Operation Excellence Awards from the Florida DEP. The two other awards received by the utility department this year were the state and national championships of the Top Ops Water Operations Competition. Our team, named the Water Boys, won at both the state and national level this past year. The team members are Fred Greiner, Peter Roussel, and Tom Martins, and they're coached by Jim Hogan. The Top Ops competition is put on each year by the American Water Works Association, and teams across from the U.S. and Canada answer questions. It's kind of like a brain bowl. They answer questions on operational topics including chemistry, hydrology, water distribution, public health, plant maintenance, and safety, and I think this past year, math, right? Math. We've won the national championship 6 times since 2006, and the state championship for 10 of the past 12 years. And when I was looking into the story,
Jim Hogan told me a little story about how when we were part of Florida Water Services, we were actually on a team with people from Deltona because we were all in the same company. And then after we, when the city started having the utility department and we became our own team, then Deltona's become sort of our biggest competitor. Like, they're our rivals now. So that's kind of interesting. And there is, in fact, a large trophy, which we need to get. I didn't bring them, sorry. There's a trophy we're going to get for the photo op, and it shows the winners each year of the state top ops team. And Jim Hogan's name is on that trophy quite a few times, maybe more than anyone else, right? So. All right, so I want to, on behalf of the city, I want to thank all of you for your hard work, your dedication, your commitment. We know that the payoff is that we have great service and terrific water, and we truly appreciate it, and congratulations to you on all of the awards received over the years, but also especially for the four we received last year. So. I should have pointed out that the picture is, we're going to use that in the water report, and it's not all of the awards, but we brought them over here and we did a photo op at your nice. At your seats. So, all right, I think we'll file a little bit into the middle here and have the council come down, and we're going to do a photo op. And the people with the awards need to stand toward the front so the awards show. Impressive.
You got a lot of.
Keep squeezing.
Before you leave, guys, on behalf of the City Council and the residents of Palm Coast, we really thank you for your continued commitment to not only providing clean water to our residents, but it is beyond pride that we sit here today and watch not only that you're recognized for your hard work and your efforts, but for all you do for our city. So thank you very much.
Now go back to work.
He's our PR person.
Easy transition. Agenda item number 5 is the presentation of the Patriot Award. And we have Army Captain Andrew Wolverine here today, who's going to be presenting.
Thank you.
Good morning.
My name is Captain Andrew Woolwine. I work for the fire department here, the city of Palm Coast. And last year, in 2016, I was deployed overseas with the United States military, with the Army. And that can be a stressful time for myself and my family. And I wanted to thank the city and the city council for supporting me while I was gone and my family. And I also wanted to recognize some members of the fire department, my chain of command, who made much easier on me and my family. Now, Battalion Chief Petrillo, Chief Forte, and Fire Chief Beadle, if you could join me up here. So this is the Patriot Award. It's put on from the Office of the Secretary of Defense. And It reads, for contributing to the national security and protecting liberty and freedom by supporting employee participation in America's National Guard and Reserve Force. I've worked for an employer before coming here to this city that was not so friendly in my my job with the military, and this really put me at ease when I came here and worked for the city, and especially with my chain of command here, and just felt a lot of love and support from the city, from the council, and from my chain of command, and it really helped me, and it helped even more so my family at home that I had to leave here, that they could reach out at any time for any help and support they needed. So I just wanted to recognize these guys, and thank you very much.
And thank you for your service, for all you do for our country. We really do appreciate it. Thank you.
There is a certain sense of irony that Andrew asked us to come up for this. He allegedly goes away one weekend a month, and then every year he goes away for 2 weeks. He says he's going to training, but we're not sure. But the irony is, this is what we're required to do, allow him to go do what he's supposed to do. And if anyone should be recognized, I believe it should be his wife and family that allow him to go do what he needs to do for our needs, our country. And what we don't know is what he goes through when he leaves and goes away and does what he's supposed to do for us. And I want to thank Andrew for what he's done for us and what he will continue to do. And thank you.
One more time.
If everybody can just slide that way just a little. This way. Okay. All right. One, two, three. We'll do a couple. One, two, three. One more. One, two, three. Perfect.
Okay, we will now move to agenda item number 6. See a friendly face in the audience. Mayor Nets will be presenting the Florida Inland Navigation District on Intracoastal Waterway Access Study.
Thank you very much, and good morning. It's a little strange being on this side of the podium.
You promised you would.
But for the record, I'm John Nets, and I am the Flagler County Commissioner for the Florida Inland Navigation District. Before I get to the specifics, I'd like to give you some background information, if I may. Florida Inland Navigation District, or FIND as we call it, is a 12-county special taxing district created by the Florida legislature back in 1927. We were created to be the, quote, local sponsor of the Florida Intracoastal Waterway. Now, that needs a little explanation. Most people aren't aware of the fact that the channel in the ICW, not the shore, not the banks, but the channel, 200 foot wide, 12 foot deep down the middle, is most correctly known as the federal channel because it is owned by the federal government. And as such, the management of that channel falls to the Army Corps of Engineers. Now, when I talk about management, the single biggest issue is maintaining the depth of the channel. You may or may not know that much of the intracoastal waterway is natural, the Matanzas River to the north, the Halifax River to the south, but most of the ICW through Flagler County is man-made. Now, I'll give you an analogy. Suppose you took a shovel, went out and dug a little hole in your front yard and just left it. Well, over time, the edges would cave in, the grass would grow in, the rain would bring stuff, and eventually, over time, that hole would be filled. Well, the same thing happens in the intercoastal waterway, which means you need to periodically dredge it. That dredging is managed by the Army Corps of Engineers, but unfortunately it's not funded by the Army Corps of Engineers. The federal government has never funded the Army Corps sufficiently to maintain the ICW. That's why we were created as a special taxing district. Fine spends over $5 million a year just on dredging expenses, and probably more than that on occasions. So the one issue is paying for it. But the second major role that FIND has is determining what do you do with this stuff after you've dredged it. Now, if you're lucky, and the material you're dredging up is what they call beach-quality sand, you can bring in a couple miles of steel pipes and booster pumps, and you can actually pump the sand out onto the beach. Right now, as we speak, they're dredging the Tanzas River, and it's being pumped onto the beaches at Summerhaven. But you're not always fortunate enough to have so-called beach-quality compatible sand. If you don't have that, you have to put it somewhere else. And where you put it is in what's called a dredge material management area. And that's the second major role that FIND has, to acquire, create, and maintain these DMMAs. Now, what's a DMMA? Well, you take 4 or 5 acres of ground, you clear it, you dig a big hole in the middle, you build a 10-foot berm around it, you put in inflow and outflow pipes, you landscape it, and then you let it sit. And then when you need a repository for your dredge material, you pump it into this big, huge holding vessel. Over time, the water settles out, it flows back into the ICW through the pipes, and after a year or two, the material is sufficiently dry that you can offload it into trucks, take it out, and use it for construction fill, roadbed, or things of that nature. You may or may not know that there are 4 such DMMAs right here in Flagler County. One just recently completed up by Prince's Place, one immediately north of Waterfront Park and behind Children's Memorial Garden, and a couple others down by Roberts Road. Those have not been constructed yet. So that's the main function to FIND, but several years after FIND was created by the Florida legislature, they came back and said, you know, the ICW is an asset to our state, but it's an asset only if the public has access to it. We want FIND to promote public access to public waters. And we do that through our annual grant program. A portion of every dollar that's collected in each of the 12 counties is set aside for competitive grants. Recently, Flagler County used FIND dollars to do major reconstruction of Moody Boat Ramp in Flagler Beach, Bing's Landing, and Herschel King. City of Palm Coast used FIND dollars to help create Waterfront Park and Long Creek Nature Preserve. Town of Marineland has used FIND dollars to do a major expansion and renovation of their marina. Now, some people say, all right, that's all very nice, it's all very good, but is that a wise use of taxpayers' dollars? And the answer is a resounding yes. FIND contracts with an independent advisor, if you will, to do what we call an economic impact analysis. And that information is on our website. It's updated every 10 years, and it's per county. And we can actually show you not just qualitatively, but quantitatively, how much return on investment there is. I mean, you know instinctively that waterfront property is more valuable than non-waterfront property. If you have a canalfront lot, you're probably going to pay more for that lot than a non-canalfront lot. Then you're going to have businesses that are related to the waterway, restaurants, bars, marinas, marine sales and service. So there's tax dollars generated there, and there's job creation there. Very, very, very significant return on investment. Well, that brings me to the reason I'm here today. The value, the added value of having the ICW depends on being able to use that access. Whether you're building a single-family home on a canalfront lot, whether you're building a home on the ICW itself, whether you're putting a business in, a hotel, a motel, a restaurant, there's a certain amount of work that has to be done from the water side of the property, whether it be building a seawall, building a dock, building a marina, building a boat ramp. That's done by people known as marine contractors, and there's probably half a dozen of them here in Flagler County. You probably often meet with Klein Construction. They're probably the largest, but there are a number of smaller 3-, 4-, 5-man businesses that do marine construction. And what we've seen throughout the 12 counties, from Nassau County in the north to Miami-Dade County in the south, is that as property values go up, as waterfront construction continues, the number of access points for these marine contractors diminishes. They have to have a place where they can put their barge in, load their equipment on it. They need a place where they can offload building materials, concrete panels, vinyl panels, pilings, lumber. They need a place to load this on their barge and then take it to the work site. And what we've been hearing throughout the east coast of Florida is that the number of accessible sites for these people is diminishing. So about a year ago, FIND hired an outside consultant to do what I call a desktop exercise. Take Google Maps, take GIS data, take tax rolls, and come up with, county by county, what existing sites are there, what potential sites are there. Well, that's the first phase of the process. Flagler County was the first county to get the second phase, which is boots on the street, or actually boots on the boat. FIND staff and myself went out on a boat and actually photographed the entire area here in Flagler County and tried to identify what are the most likely sites. Now, what do you need? Well, you don't want it in the midst of a residential neighborhood, preferably. You want enough water depth that you can bring a barge up to it. You need some place where you can get access by a truck to offload building materials. We've asked our consultant, county by county, to come back with not just this theoretical desktop view, but come back with some real practical information. Now, we expect that the Flagler County study will be done probably by the middle of April. Now, here's where local governments come into play. We can provide all the data you want, we can provide all the information you want, but it's local government that determines what happens. Through your comprehensive plan, through your future land use maps, through your zoning, through your building codes, you determine what can or cannot happen on these pieces of property. So what we're asking is that when we have this final data, we've asked Flagler County to convene a meeting of Flagler County, Flagler Beach, Beverly Beach, Palm Coast, and Marineland, the elected officials, or perhaps first the technical staff from those five governments, to come together, look at the data, and see what, if anything, can be done or should be done to ensure continued access by commercial entities to the waterway. What we don't want to have happen is 50 years from now, somebody saying, what in the world were those fools thinking about when they let this happen? So we expect that probably by the middle of April we'll have the data. We will provide that to all of the local governments, and then we're going to ask you to get together and see what makes sense for Flagler County. As I said, let's say there's 6 marine contractors. You don't need 6 access points. They can share. But ideally, they would be distributed across the 18 miles of waterway that runs through Flagler County. Now, we've already met with your city manager. We've already met with the city manager of Flagler Beach. We've met with the county administrator. We've met with technical staff from those three governments to get their input. Now I'm going to ask you folks take the next step toward the end of April. Any questions?
I just have one. I mean, so you're saying collaboratively we come together as a county and the data is given, and then we decide as a community where those access points could be located. So does the data that you're seeing, do we have an issue in Flagler County, do you think, or is it going to be something we have to immediately correct?
At the moment, things are functioning in Flagler County, but what we see happening, this piece of property sells off. This piece of property sells off. Somebody builds a home or somebody builds a business here. Well, now that point is no longer accessible. Some of your contractors are simply using vacant land with or without the owner's permission. What we want to be sure is that for the future, there are some that can't be sold out from under, so to speak. We need them in perpetuity. Probably you're not talking private land as much as you are publicly owned property. I mean, there are several options. What you have to look at is, okay, distribution from the north to the south of Flagler County. You have to look at the quality of the site. You don't want it to be intrusive on residential or other sites, because there's commercial trucks. They're not used every day, but they're probably used once a month, once every 2 weeks, depending. But if you don't have this, here's what happens. If the contractor doesn't have a local access point, they have to go further north or further south. This adds exponentially to the costs of marine construction. Now, drive around the canals right now in Palm Coast, and you'll see a number of docks that are hanging. What happens, the homeowner says, well, I don't use the boat anymore, and I've got a quote of $40,000 to fix this dock. I'm just not going to pay that. Well, you have an eyesore for the neighborhood, but there's an even bigger impact. Because when that house goes on the market for $300,000, the prospective buyer says, whoa, there's $50,000 work. I'll give you $240,000 for the house. So the sale price goes down. Ask Jay Gardner what that means. The appraised values go down. The amount of taxes the local government collects goes down. And it hurts our entire economy. So what we're asking is, do what we can do now to ensure that we have sufficient marine access points for the future. And that brings me to the last thing I'm going to mention to you. This is one little aspect of what you put on the waterway. What's the best use for all the rest of the waterway? Is it single-family residences? Is it condominiums? Is it apartments? Is it restaurants? Is it bars? Is it boat ramps? Is it marinas? Is it fishing piers? What is the best use for the available property? Are there areas that ought to be considered for redevelopment? Find has made $100,000 per county available for a matching grant to do what we call a maritime master plan. We are urging each county, each of the 12 counties in our district, to come together as a county and say, okay, what's our vision for this waterway? Do we want all single-family houses? Do we want a mixture? What do we want? Where do we want it? Are there areas that might be marked for redevelopment? That's a kind of a longer-term issue, but this Maritime Master Plan will be supported by the decisions you make with regard to commercial access.
I had another question. It's shifting gears to beach sand on our beaches. You said Summer Haven right now, they're dredging to has Fine looked at Flagler County as an option to maybe using dredge material to re-nourish our beaches, since we're struggling?
What we've been told is that our sand is not compatible with Flagler Beach.
Okay.
What we're dredging in Matanzas now is a relatively fine white sand. It would be very much in contrast to what you see on Flagler Beach. But I'll give you an interesting situation. Further north, we dredge through St. Augustine. And for years, the sand from St. Augustine dredging has gone on to Anastasia Island beaches. Well, after our good friend Hurricane came through, the folks up in Volano Beach lost 7 miles of beach. And all of a sudden they said, whoa, whoa, don't send that sand south, send that sand north, which is a good idea. But unfortunately, because it's never been done before, there were no permits, there was no right-of-way, there were no easements, there was no government permits. You need EPA and DEP and the Water Management District. So we had to delay the dredging in this whole area for a number of months until we could get all that paperwork. But yeah, that sand is available, and if it's compatible, we got to put it somewhere.
Any questions, council members?
Thank you very much
for your
time and
consideration. Thank you for your contribution to Flagler County, Mayor Nitz.
Thank you.
And Jim, we have someone that's working right now?
Yes.
Okay.
Our staff has met with ex-Mayor Nitz, and will continue to do so and help their consultant to find appropriate locations. And Then when they're finished, we'll report back to City Council with their findings.
Well, and I agree. I mean, our name is Palm Coast. We have a coast, so it's a conversation we need to have and look to the future. So thank you again. Agenda item number 7. Is it ordinance?
Yes, Madam Mayor, I'll read the title. This is the first reading of this rezoning ordinance. This is a quasi-judicial matter, and the title is as follows. It's an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Palm Coast, Florida, providing for the amendment of the official zoning map, as that map is established in Section 2.06 of the City of Palm Coast Unified Land Development Code. This ordinance is amending the official zoning map for property located at 5719 North U.S. Highway 1. This property is described as a parcel of land lying west of U.S. Highway 1 within Government Section 15, Township 11 South, Range 30 East in Flagler County, Florida, being a portion of Parcel 139 in the official records book 0706, page 1477 of Flagler County, Florida. This parcel contains 50 acres, more or less, and is being rezoned from Suburban Estate, or EST1, zoning district with approximately 8 acres to be commercial, general commercial, or COM2 zoning district, and then approximately 42 acres to multifamily residential, also known as MFR2 zoning district. Lastly, this ordinance provides for conflict severability for non-codification, provides for an effective date, and as I mentioned, Madam Mayor and Council, this is a quasi-judicial matter, first reading, so if there have been any ex parte communications on this matter, those need to be disclosed at this time.
Have none.
None.
Thank you.
Mayor, City Council, this is a rezoning. It's actually kind of interesting to me because a lot of people ask when I'm out in the community, what about all those cows out there on US 1 and what are they all about? A lot of people aren't used to living in a city and seeing the agriculture, although Flagler County is. History is very much based on agriculture, but so we're kind of in that border area, and US 1 is a good example of kind of the transition that's in Palm Coast, and this rezoning kind of reflects that type of development and activity we anticipate in that area. Bill's going to give you the presentation.
And we should just say, for the record, agriculture land also pays a lot less taxes than other.
Should I give the plug now as to why the cows are out there? Yes. The reason they put the cows out there is because it substantially, I don't know, cuts their property taxes down like to 80-90%. I don't know exact percentage, but it substantially reduces it, their property taxes if they put cows on the property, so that's why they do that. So that's not the case with this. This is a piece of property that historically has truly been in a family that is used it for horses, agricultural purposes. But this proposal is to move to that next step. Bill, if you'll take it from here.
Good morning. Bill Hoover from the Planning Division. The site's about 50 acres, and it's located on the west side of North U.S. Highway 1, about 1/2 mile south of Palm Coast Parkway. And it's proposed to be rezoned from suburban estates to multifamily residential 2 and general commercial. The future land use map, which governs all our rezoning petitions, designates the subject property as mixed use. And the in the mixed use designation, both of the proposed zoning districts, which are MFR2 and COM2, are specifically allowed in the mixed-use designation. The site's been used for agricultural purposes prior to the city being incorporated. The area in brown shows the 42 acres that is being rezoned to multifamily. The area in red shows the 8 acres being rezoned to general commercial. And basically this table here has been shortened, but the in the second column there, it shows the standards for the suburban estates, which is sort of like halfway between residential and large lot single family. So in that case, the maximum impervious surface ratio, which is the area that has buildings and pavement on it, is capped at 50%. as it goes to multifamily or commercial, that would increase to 70% as the cap. The building heights would also increase from the current 35 feet to 60 feet for the multifamily and up to 100 feet for the general commercial, and the density for the multifamily would increase about 12-fold. The applicant notified the neighbors of a neighborhood information meeting by a mailing on December 27th. This was held on January 10th at Christ the King Evangelical Lutheran Church, which is directly to the south of the subject property. Three persons attended this hearing. Their questions were answered, and since this petition's been turned in, we've had two signs on the property for several months now. The staff has never received one comment from the general public, at least so far. Staff's required to base their review on five criteria in section 2.05.05 of the Land Development Code. Criteria A, the proposed development must not be in conflict with or contrary to the public interest. And it's a proposed mixed-use project, and in staff's opinion, it'll be compatible with a variety of other uses that are allowed nearby the intersection of Palm Coast Parkway and U.S. Highway 1. Criteria B, the proposed development must be consistent with the provisions of the Land Development Code in the comprehensive plan. Staff determined it met all the Land Development Code criteria, including the permitted density range of up to 12 units per acre for uplands. And additionally, comprehensive plan and the Land Development Code require any project of in here that has 50 or more units will have to have two separate access points onto U.S. Highway 1. Third criteria, the proposed development must not impose a significant financial liability or hardship for the city. In this case, the water lines are located to the north, and the sewer lines also, and so the applicant has agreed to extend the water and sewer lines to the property at their cost. So hence, we have no significant financial liability. Criteria D, the proposed development must not create an unreasonable hazard, nuisance, or constitute a threat to the general health, welfare, or safety of the city's inhabitants. Since the site's designated mixed use on the future land use map, this allows a variety of higher intensity land uses, including multifamily residential two zoning and general commercial zoning. And the last criteria, the proposed development must comply with all other applicable local, state, and federal laws, statutes, ordinance, regulations, and codes. And as this project goes through the development review criteria and processes, it'll have to meet the Land Development Code and the city's comprehensive plan, as well as federal regulations such as FDEP, St. John's Water Management District, Army Corps of Engineers, and so forth. The next steps for this process will be, it'll go to the planning board as a subdivision master plan. Next, they'll turn in a preliminary plat that's done internally. Then a final plat will come in that'll go to city council. And finally, there'll be site plans on each of the individual lots after it gets subdivided. Both the planning board and city staff recommend approval to city council to rezone the 50 acres from suburban estate to 42 acres going to multifamily residential 2 and 8 acres going to general commercial for the Winds Chant Country Manor application 3247. And the applicant has some representatives here, and they do have a brief presentation. Robert Paymesh is the project engineer, And Steve Sainor, the managing member, is not able to be here. His daughter's in the hospital in Halifax. So that's why we have the engineer and also their planner here.
Good morning, Madam Mayor, council members. I'm Robert Pemish with PE Group. I'm from Orlando. My colleague Larry Swick is here. He's the project architect. And as Mr. Hoover said, Steve Sainor, who should have been at the podium right now, unfortunately couldn't come. He had a family issue. He's at the hospital with his daughter. And so I'll do the best I can to answer any questions you may have. We have a team of experts on our side. We've been working on this project for quite a while. The ownership group, the project's under contract, and the ownership group are very good group of experts, from marketing to one partner has extensive decades of work experience with insurance companies. We have, I believe, a doctor or two in the group, but we have a great project that we're working on. We're at the zoning phase right now, and as you know, that's the first step, which leads to the following steps, which make me far more involved, and my colleagues get far more involved in developing the project to something that really works well. Quick background. I started working here in Palm Coast. Many of you don't know me. We have not seen, I think Mr. Cuff does. I was getting sidetracked. I was in my early 20s. I got a phone call one day. The gentleman goes, "Hey, I'm Jim Gardner. I'm a president of ITT here, and you guys are engineers?" I said, "Yes." And he goes, "Well, you ever heard of St. John's Water Management District?" And I said, "Yeah." He goes, "Well, why do I need a permit from them? I have projects going on, and they tell me I need a permit." Long story short, he said, "Come on up here to help me. Help us get this thing done." And that was almost 30-some years ago, and things have changed so much around here. It's amazing. But in my experience in Palm Coast, which started a long time ago, I met a lot of wonderful people, most of whom are still here. Jack Kelly, Clint Smith, Frank Meeker, may rest in peace. Steve Flanagan, Richard Adams, Richard Gordon, I mean, Art Barr, John Moden, Bill Butler. I mean, we all work together. And time goes quickly. And so much has changed here. I'm really amazed. It's amazing. If there's things you like in the city, I was probably involved with it at some point. If there's things that don't work or you're not proud of, there's no way I was involved with it in any way, shape, or form. But I didn't want to get sidetracked. What I was trying to say is this site, the location of this site is almost really great for our proposed use. It's on the west side of US 1, and with ALF facilities, it's an industry that's evolving. There are some industry ALF facilities that you walk in, you drive up, it's a building, you go in, and that's it. But the industry is evolving, and the idea here, our vision is, from what I can deliver to you, since this is not my expertise, is to create a campus where this is what people want, a campus with a sense of belonging, an experience, an ambiance that brings together all the components of assisted living, whether it's 55-plus residential next to an independent living facility or memory care, possibly next to an assisted living facility. All those come together. There needs to be a strong pedestrian, an outdoor experience. That's a big part of it. And so we have all the components need to come together for a successful ALF to function properly and to work well and to give people what people need. Some people need care. Some people need to simply live there to be near their loved ones. So all these components come together. And then right directly on US 1, there's always the commercial aspect, the small out parcels that we envision. We don't know what the use of all the out parcels will be, but we do know that at least two or three of them could be related or could be in there to support the ALF component. There could be a pharmacy, some kind of pharmaceutical place. It could be a small doctor's office. There could be a nursing activity, and then there may be other commercial type uses. We don't know what they will be. No one does until the thing takes its own form and energy. So, having said all that, the vision is to create a campus, and we also know that on the west side, all the land to the west will probably end up remaining green or undeveloped, which gives the outside experience that we are looking for. The project does not encroach or is not, you know, squeezed in between existing residential subdivisions. It's on the west side. It's next to a church. Knowing this place, as I do almost growing up, I think it's almost one of the best spots in Palm Coast we could have come up with. So, having said that, we appreciate working with staff. We concur with their recommendations. Love to show you a rendering if you'd like to see it. But again, we're only at the zoning stage. We've put so much work into it, which was almost premature because all those happen after we have the zoning in place. So that there's less risk and less effort. But we've done a lot of work. We'd love to share them with you if you'd like to. Otherwise, I'll be glad to answer any questions you may have. Thank you for your support.
Thank you. As we did in previous meetings, I think I'll open up to the public for comment, and then we'll take council questions. Come up to the podium. Please state your name for the record. You will have 3 minutes, and your 3 minutes will begin after you state your name.
My name is Carol Hinton. I didn't know about this road work that was taking place on Matanzas Woods in US 1. And I was about to call City Hall to find out exactly what it was all about when on Saturday in the newspaper, there was an article about this. And I just couldn't believe it because I live there and I've never received a notice, not at any time, nor any of my neighbors received a notice that this project was about to come up, to be a part of our neighborhood. We should have been informed. None of us were. And when I've received the newspaper and I've gotten this article, we are now getting together to see what we can do about having a mouth in this. Because when you're telling me that you're going to have a 348-unit project, that could incorporate, I'm looking at the potential for the 348-unit project, which also includes 350,000 square feet of commercial. I mean, you're changing what this project was designated for. It's a total change, and you're going to bring in, from what I have been able to read, you're going to bring in what you choose to bring in, which possibly could be units for low-income people coming into my immediate area. So I am very much opposed to this project, very much.
Project. I think we got the wrong project.
Yeah, you're addressing a different project.
Is it a different project?
Yes, it is.
Oh, thank God.
Can I ask your
address? Oh, thank God. I'm going, oh, Jesus, what
can,
in
can
the
I ask
world?
Your address, please? Just make sure we know where you live.
Mm-hmm. I live on Ludlow Lane.
Oh, that's
and,
the last project.
I mean, I go by there. I go by there 3 and 4
You're
times a week.
You're talking about the project on US 1
and US 1 and Matanzas Woods, Ludlow Lane.
Yeah, she's in the L section.
Yes.
Oh, L. Okay.
Not so you're up at Matanzas. Okay. That's what I thought. This is actually substantially south of that. This project is south of Palm Coast Parkway. And it is on US 1, but it's miles.
US 1 and Matanzas Woods.
No.
Oh, thank God. Oh, I'm you know, so sorry.
You know what, US 1 where the Lutheran Church is, south of Palm Coast Parkway?
Yes.
It's right next door to that.
Please excuse
you have a,
me.
You have a great day. Thank you for coming.
Please excuse
me. That's good
next
thank
speaker.
You
thank you very much.
Lewis McCarthy, Palm Coast. I was sort of confused myself. Will this disturb the horse farm, the horse thing that's over there too, near the church? And also, please give this lady and anybody else listening or looking a detail of where we're talking about, because Matanzas is way up there and this is way down there. Thank you.
Next speaker. Seeing none, I'll close public comment. In regards to Mr. McCarthy's comment on the stables.
This is the stables property.
This is the stable property. And just, you know, real brief, back in 2004, there was always a vision of mixed use on there. And the stables were actually
there as a non-conforming use. So this is, like Mr. Landon said, bringing us forward to what the vision actually is in the property.
Thank you. And as just described by Mr. Landon, I think he clarified the location of this. Okay, we'll bring this back to council for questions or comments. Any questions or comments?
I, either for staff or the applicant, I saw the environmental impact report in the package, and I was interested in having somebody address the well site exclusion areas on this property and how they're going to be impacted by this development. One on the north, I believe, and also one that cuts in a considerable greater amount on the south.
Yes, sir. There are two wellheads near the property. One's at the northwest corner, or off the northwest corner. One's off the southwest corner of the property. The city has a code, an ordinance that extends to 500 feet. A 500-foot radius of a wellhead. The city code specifically provides for a list of activities that can take place within the 500-foot radius. And we have shown, we know what the zone of impact is, and our development, to the extent that's allowed by the code, will not encroach in those two 500-foot circles, if you will, Councilman, if I've answered your question. So there's no buildings, no activity per se that's outside the code that will be proposed in those areas. It takes out almost 15 acres of the property, gets affected by those two protection zones.
Well, the reason I was asking, and I know that was just a concept plan that you showed, but it looked like you had some buildings located on the extreme southern end of the property, which, again, not to hold anybody to anything like that at this stage, looked like they would be within the southern well field exclusion site.
You're absolutely correct. And that's why the rendering is not out here, because it's not correct. We have redesigned the site, and we're still redesigning it, Councilman.
And a similar question as to the wetland impacts. I saw the report.
Yes,
staff, I gather from their recommendation, is satisfied that the wetlands that are going to be impacted and mitigated by purchases of wetland credits is sufficient protection under our code for the wetlands on this site.
Yeah, their preliminary information that they provided with their study, we're comfortable with the rezoning of the property. The details will come. Their next step, and you know, Denise has been really working with their environmental folks and making sure that the plan complies to our code and everything. So, but we're comfortable with the rezoning, and you know, we still have some of those details to work with when we get to our subdivision plan.
So that's all I had.
I'll entertain a motion to approve.
Motion approved.
Second.
Motion and seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, it passes unanimously. We'll now move to agenda item number 8, which is a resolution accepting the comprehensive annual financial report for the fiscal year ending September 30th, 2016, as presented by James Moore and Company.
Mayor, City Council, this is our annual audit. And I don't know if, Chris, you're going to introduce this, but this is one of two of our consultants that you hire and work directly for you to oversee our finance department and as the auditor. So he is presenting this to you today and has good news for you. So, James, I take it from there, unless, Chris, you want to... Yeah.
Chris, do you want
to... I concur.
He's efficient. Well, thank you, Mayor, City Council members. This is your audit as of September 30th, 2016. As each year, we present your audit. First, I'd like to thank Chris. Chris Quinn's been around a number of years. He's got a new helper with him now, Helena. I don't know if y'all have met Helena. You guys, people who did the one-on-ones, you met Helena Alves. And so she just came on board right as we started the audit. So her first day of work, we were starting the audit. So kind of a, baptism by fire there. And so she's going to be a great help in the next couple of years. Well, your audit, under a couple of different auditing standards for us. You're under U.S. auditing standards. You're under government auditing standards. Because you received greater than $750,000 of federal funds, you're also under federal single audit standards, as well as some rules from the Florida Auditor General that we also have to report on. So there, the financial statements prepared by staff, prepared by Chris and his staff. Our part is to provide opinions on those financial statements and reports required under those other auditing standards. So the first one is the unmodified opinion on the basic financial statements. That opinion states that the financial statements present fairly, in all material respects, your financial position, results of operations, cash flows for the year ended, as well as the note disclosures in those financial statements are in conformity with generally accepted accounting principles. So that's the opinion you want, unmodified. It doesn't sound the best, but that's actually the best opinion we can give on financial statements as independent auditors. Internal control and compliance reports are required under government auditing standards, and we had no material weaknesses in internal control required to be reported, as well as no material instances of noncompliance. Just so you know, severity, a material weakness would be the most severe comment that we would provide. Next would be a significant deficiency, and then next purely just be management comments. As I mentioned before, your audit is also subject for federal single audit purposes due to the federal funds. The primary source this year of your federal funds was the state revolving loan funds that are used in your water and sewer, stormwater. Both of those areas have received those in the past. You had over $5 million in those funds received in the year. It is a loan, but it does fall under the federal single audit guidance. And we had no comments related to that program that was required to be tested. The management letter required by the Auditor General has about 10 different items that it goes through. Same thing with that. We had no comments that were required to be reported under the Auditor General standards. As part of that Auditor General report, there's also a financial condition assessment. That financial condition assessment lays out criteria from the Auditor General and compares you against yourself for a five-year period, as well as comparing the City of Palm Coast to similar-sized governments, both on property value as well as taxable value and population. And with those, it compares them, and there's either a rating for each one of those indicators, a favorable, inconclusive, which is basically average, and unfavorable. So for this year, your average inconclusive, which is a good thing, that's where you want to be, is typically at average or favorable, depending on the economy and what your future plans are. You also have your fund balance policy, which is note 19. You guys were in compliance with your fund balance policy. For the majority of your operating funds, that policy is between 10 and 20% of an annual expenditures for the year. So you're right in line in all those as well. I'll quickly go down through some highlights if you kind of say, well, what happened in the City of Palm Coast from a financial standpoint for the year? Well, and for your governmental type activities, which, your general government, your roads, your cultural recreation type activities, that's where all these are. Your general fund increased just slightly by $188,000. Capital project funds this year wasn't as active. Last year, of course, you had the completion of the city hall, opened up in October here. Property taxes were up $983,000 without a change in millage rate. So that millage rate stayed the same. There's purely by property values increasing as well as new construction. Capital grants and contributions decreased by $1.7 million. That was primarily due to, in prior years, you had some road funding programs that were funded by grants. You didn't have that activity in the current year. Charges for services just down slightly, $156,000. Your expenses increased by $1.1 million, the majority of that related to just increased annual maintenance on your parks and recreational activities that's occurring. Have this one here specifically for you, Mr. Landon, that we've eliminated the deficit in the Transportation Impact Fee Fund. That's been around a couple years. I figured you'd like that one. And we do still have a deficit in one fund. That's the Old Kings Road Special Assessment Fund. And over time, that special assessment has got 27 more years that those property owners would pay on that. It's just the principal is starting in the current year that we're in right now. Course, if that property changes hands, is sold, at that time, that special assessment will be collected in full. So that could speed up that timetable. That's what everyone's hoping. That'll speed up a little bit faster than waiting 27 years to get all the money back. Your utility fund increased the unrestricted assets of that. You have restrictions in that fund as well based on your debt service funds, any impact fees you collect as properties are developed. Those are restricted for expansion of your utility system. There was an increase there primarily due to your scheduled rate increases. Going forward, those rate increases will be based off CPI, and you'll be doing a utility rate study again in the near future, probably the next year or two. Are you guys already in that?
Later this summer.
Later this summer, you guys will have that coming forward again because it's been about 5 years. That's the typical time frame. Advances to other funds. As I mentioned before, you have Old Kings Road Special Assessment. As opposed to borrowing externally, going to a bank and borrowing for that money, you borrowed internally with your utility fund. So it's $4.8 million owed back to the utility fund that the special assessment fund has borrowed. Long-term debt, always get asked about that. How is our debt? What's going on with the debt for the city? Each year, the last couple years, you've been able to refinance additional parts of your debt, whether it's in your utility fund, whether it's your CRA fund. This year, the big one was, of course, the 2007 utility bonds, a refinance with a $40 million bank loan. That's becoming more prevalent. As I was talking to some of you in our one-on-one meetings, you know, probably 15 years ago, most banks wouldn't touch above $10 million for a municipality. Now they're very willing to loan to governments, and that helps you both on the interest rate as well as the lower cost compared to issuing traditional bonds. There was $5.7 million of new state revolving loan funds. And, of course, subsequent to year-end, but still required, especially if you think about someone who's not familiar with the city of Palm Coast and Florida, maybe looking at it from another area, there was a little Hurricane Matthew came through in October after the end of the year. And so we're required to kind of disclose any of those types of information for readers. And about $2 million, you have a debris and cleanup cost there. We anticipate, and Chris anticipates, about 85% of that will be ultimately reimbursed between federal and state. And because you do have a disaster reserve fund that the council funded long ago, that cash was available for you guys to be able to pay that money out now. No one really knows when you're going to get paid. That's the big issue right now with all my governmental entities that we audit, counties, cities, both in Volusia, Flagler, Seminole, all this area, is trying to figure out when exactly that is. We're going to feel really good if we get it by September 30th, which is unfortunate. It's actually taken longer to get reimbursed for Hurricane Matthew than it did for us and my cities to get reimbursed for Charlie, Jean, and Francis. So it's a good thing you have the Hurricane Reserve Fund because you had that cash available. You didn't have to dip into your fund balance policy, or in some cases, I have some governments that are potentially at the point now they're going to have to be borrowing money depending on how severe their damage was. Retirement plans, you guys are, as I mentioned to a number of you, you have differences about Palm Coast. You don't have a large, significant defined benefit pension plan. Majority of your employees are on a defined contribution plan, which is a 401k, it's not a 401k, but similar to that for governments, a 401a plan, which results in zero net pension liability. You do have a volunteer firefighters program that is considered a defined benefit program, and that actually is an asset, which means the cash and investments you have there exceed the projected liabilities out into the future right now by $850,000. You do have 15 employees that are in the state retirement system, and those are employees that originally were with Flagler County when the city was first incorporated, came over to the city, and they're still in the state retirement system. Just those 15 employees create a $3 million liability, net pension liability, that's increased double, basically more than double from last year. And that's just the fluctuation you have when you have a defined benefit pension plan. The majority of that depended on the market. If the investment market is down at year end, and their year end is at June 30th, so at June 30th, the investment market was down significantly, that greatly affected that net pension liability. With that, you'll continue to pay the required contribution for those employees, which you don't have a control over that amount. It's set by the state. And once all those employees, you know, have retired or left service, whichever one they do, we hope they all retire from the city of Palm Coast, and then that liability will be eliminated.
Go ahead. I can't stress how significant that is for us, because this is an issue that a lot of local governments struggle with. But just 15 employees, and we have nearly 400, has a liability of $3 million. So if you were to have all 400 in the state pension plan, you can do the math, or maybe very quickly, but you're talking hundreds of millions, if not getting close to the $1 billion kind of liability. Now, that's not something we'd have to come up with immediately, but it does really impact communities when the economy goes in a down cycle. So the fact that we have defined contribution, which is still a very nice retirement package we offer employees, but every payroll we contribute to their retirement and don't have any future liability. And that is huge for us. So I just like to keep stressing that, because a lot of people don't understand that one.
Yeah, that's a difference. As I talk to each other, there's a couple differences that your city has, one being that, one as well as no general government debt. The only debt you have on the governmental side is related to your CRA funds. And the other difference that I always point out to council members is just revenue streams. Most other municipalities in your area, either north, south of you, west of you, of this size of a city, would have utility taxes, would have a utility tax and a franchise fee, definitely on electric. Some may or may not have the water, but definitely almost all of them have some type of tax on the electric services, which you guys do not. So general fund, that's where your unrestricted monies are. Most of your special revenue funds all have some type of restriction with it, whether it's an impact fee fund, your debt service fund, or you may have your capital project funds. So this is what you really have left at the end of the year, about $6.4 million. You did not appropriate any of your fund balance to balance your next year's budget. So that's a positive thing. So we do a couple different percentages there. You're at 22% if you just look at physical 16 expenditures. If you throw in the transfers, you're about 21. Looking at your budget for 17, you're right about 20%. And that's actually where your fund balance policy has that range. Anywhere from 10 to 20% is the range that's been set by council. That is all I have, but I'll take any questions as always, or comments or suggestions.
Any questions? I just want to say thank you. I mean, this is really important, and as Mr. Landon stated, it's very rare in local governments not to have some comments by our auditors. So I want to recognize our financial staff. Our team really does an exceptional job to make sure there are appropriate checks and balances in place for our residents to feel safe with their tax dollars and other revenue sources. So it is very, very rare, and I don't know if the public really truly understands that, but I've been in local government for many years, and it hasn't happened in my past experiences. So this is very refreshing, and I hope to keep the momentum going and keep on this path and track.
Mayor, if I could piggyback on that, this isn't the first year. It's I don't know. Year after year, we have no comments. So this is not unusual for us. It is unusual for most local governments not to have some comments. We've had some policy comments, such as we needed backup for Chris Quinn with another accountant, and that's been taken care of now and those type of things. But since I've been here in 10 years, we've never had, that I can recall, a financial comment.
Yeah, it's been a number of years since we've had that. In addition, this is called a comprehensive annual financial report. So it includes additional information than what the state requirement would be, your regular financial statement requirement. So you have a statistical section in here. You have an introductory section with a letter of transmittal. And that whole package gets sent to the Government Finance Officers Association. And they issue a certificate of financial reporting excellence, which you've had for how many years? Probably almost since you've been a city. I think you've basically got it every year since you've been a city. And I actually review on, I review for GFOA as well. I just can't review you guys. I'm typically like Nebraska and Iowa and places like that is where they send me the CAFRs for. So in addition to that report, you guys also have a number of other awards. You do a popular annual financial report. Chris also submits your budget document to the GFOA as well to get their input on that. And there's a couple other ones that I can never, there's about four or five different ones that are listed in here that you guys get as well. So very proud of that.
Great job. Thank you. We'll now open up to the public for public comment. Any member of the public wish to make comment on agenda item number 8, please do so at this time. Seeing none, I'll close public comment. We need approval of the report.
Yeah, the resolution actually doesn't approve the audit. It accepts the audit because it's really just accepting the...
I'll entertain a motion to accept the auditing report.
So moved.
Second.
Motion and seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Seeing none, it passes unanimously. Thank you again.
Thank you.
Agenda item number 9 is a resolution approving the strategic action plan updates and additional priorities for fiscal year 2017-18. Mr. Landon is...
Yeah, Mayor, City Council, this has been an ongoing process. You have had a couple of workshops on priorities for this coming year. Denise is not going to do the full presentation again because it's fairly lengthy, but she is going to just highlight what City Council has asked us to incorporate in our strategic action plan, which becomes part of our performance measure. So, Denise, if you'll take it from here.
Thank you, Mr. Landon. So, just to go through these slides, just an overview of that timeline that started in early January that led into some deliverables from the Strategic Action Plan team. Most recently, having special workshops in February where the team consolidated feedback from council members. And then, of course, most recent on March 14th, where we presented a proposal. We received additional feedback from council on some items that were not provided in the presentation, and the team has gone back, and we're here today to share some of that information. And just for a general overview, what happens after today and moving into the upcoming slides and consideration of the resolution and exhibit, basically this is a gateway into a an action agenda. We call it an action agenda. So basically we take what's given to us today by adoption, and we see how do we get this done. And we determine basically measures that implement getting these things done. This is not the last time that you'll see these items. They'll come back to you in the form of budget or possible updates or investigations, so forth and so on. So I'm going to go through these fairly quickly. Most of these are what was heard on March 14th. So we'll start with areas to update in the strategic action plan. We received guidance from council on the vision. I won't read this in complete detail, but expanding our vision, enhancing the resolution of the vision, and adding more detail. Goal 2, economic, will be updated, enhancing basically what we've accomplished from Prosperity 2021. And this is unique. Having this approach from council, that giving a higher level of energy to this focus, we really appreciate that. And this is what this process is all about. Basically, looking at our strategic action plan, giving staff guidance on where you want to go in the future, and then just enhancing it along the way. From March 14th, it was brought to our attention about fiber. And we are doing many activities regarding FiberNet and fiber within the city. But we went back to our notes, looked back at the meetings, the special workshops, and say, what did we hear? So this is new today, but we felt that was important to spend a little time on this because it is relatively new from a narrative. Just going through additional areas that could be updated directly to the strategic action plan or being points of interest. The first is evaluate opportunities and incorporate fiber technology into major city infrastructure improvements. Conduct a feasibility study to determine the potential of expanding fiber infrastructure and revising the city's business model through a private-public partnership. We actually have activities along those lines right now, but we would enhance those based on council's discussion today. And then also evaluate fiber initiative with the University of Florida Whitney Lab facilities to determine mutual beneficial opportunities. This stems very closely with the strategy of fostering high-tech companies. So we did include a placeholder on the resolution, item 3, that we could expand our goals within the economic focus to include these items as well. So we're looking to council as a little bit of guidance and also looking to staff to receive a little discretion about maybe enhancing these strategies within the economic to include a little bit more focus on fiber. So that's new, but wanted to spend some time on that because it was an area that we did not cover on the 14th. Goal 5, another comment brought to our attention at the last workshop that we should include an element of safety into the goal. We really appreciate that feedback, and this is what we're proposing to ensure a safe community for our citizens and visitors while providing affordable and enjoyable options for cultural, educational, recreational, and leisure time events. These are areas that we're actually already doing activities, but we're just adding a little bit more detail. They would, of course, be focus areas for staff as part of our action agenda to move forward with. These are what you heard on March 14th. These are areas new. We consider them new. Basically, focus on activities that we're not currently doing. 6, 7, and 8 blend in to the previous objectives and the economic focus. And then the other areas we would, of course, turn into activities that would gradually come back to council at certain times for additional consideration. Also, just expanding on what we discussed on the 14th of special events, revisit the Parks Recreation Master Plan. Nothing new here from the 14th. And just to final the inventory out, the last few points of interest is to the areas I've already covered, but just for respecting the resolution and how it's designed. We talk about the fiber technology, which we already covered, 17, 18, and 19. And then the last two was brought to our attention of investigate options to install and maintain informational kiosks at high-volume shopping locations. And 21, present an update on the implementation of the bus stop safety plan. And just an overview of the resolution and the activities held therein. So the red is relatively new, just presented today. And again, we have a placeholder for item number 3 to possibly expand an incorporated element of fiber. And with that, any questions?
I do have a question. The continuous lighting isn't on this. And I looked on the 2017 glance, and it wasn't on that one. So is it because it comes from a different pot of money that it's not showing on this?
That's an excellent question. All of our priorities annually that are adopted, they become ingrained into the activities. So that actually is an adopted priority. And we do have activities therein. I believe what's in a study phase at this time.
We're working with FPNL on, design is probably more design than study.
But are there any monies that are set aside to do that? Or are we going to not have money to do that because it wasn't made a priority?
It is a priority from last year. It's currently a priority. And design is our responsibility, but the actual installation does not cost us money per se, capital dollars. It does increase our annual electric bill to FPNL, and that will be coming back to you. But, yes, we're moving forward with that this year. It's already a priority that City Council established. So
You are welcome to add it to this resolution, too, just to reemphasize the being a priority if City Council chooses. And we're already moving forward with it, but you're welcome to do that if you'd like.
Yes.
Just a process question. So this the lighting, the continuous light, was on the strategic action plan many years ago, and it was postponed due to the recession, correct?
I don't know if it was on the strategic action plan.
Okay.
It was part of our capital projects. Yes, it was part of our program. I don't know exactly how it was there because it started before I actually came here. And then, yes, during the recession, that was one of the items that City Council chose to cut back on to save some dollars. And then last year, City Council instructed us, I don't know if it was at the SAP process or a budget process, but you instructed us to move forward.
It was during the SAP process.
Okay. And so we are in that process right now, bringing that back.
But it's in and it's working. We're just at a early phase of it.
And while we're on, I was, because one of those, a lot of people do not know, there's two type of streetlights that we are involved in. One of them is the neighborhood lights, and that's where you'll see the lights at intersections inside the neighborhoods. We install those anytime we get a request. It just takes one request, and we will install. Actually, FP&L installs and then adds it to our bill. The other is a continuous lighting, and that's for along our major thoroughfares. When we do a new project, a street project, Beltair, Old Kings Road, and Palm Coast Parkway, Sixth Landing, et cetera, we always include lighting in the new project. And then to retrofit some of the existing ones, we were moving forward with that. And that's the project that we stopped. We're moving forward with that again this year. Once again, we have to do the design because it's, you know, depends on where the poles are, et cetera, as to how much light and what the wattage is and all that. We are moving forward with design on Beltair South from Palm Coast Parkway to State Road 100. That was a priority. We have some other areas such as Whiteview, Longview, Lakeview, et cetera, that are also on our list to move forward with. So, once again, if you add it to the list, it's going to be one of those existing, just reemphasize it. We'll have to bring it forward to you for you to approve the design. So it's not formally approved until that comes your way.
Discussion, questions, or count? Now open agenda item number 9, open to the public. Any member of the public wish to make comments on this agenda item, please do so. State your name for the record.
My name is John Ness. Just an FYI, the Northeast Florida Regional Council, the Planning Council, has added a position entitled Safety to Schools. It's not just bus stops, but it's the whole issue of improving children's access to schools. So you may want to contact them. It's a brand new position. I don't think it's up and running yet, but they have hired the person, so it is a resource that you may be able to use.
Any other member of the public wish to make comment on agenda item number 9?
Mayor, if I could just say a big thank you to Denise and her team. This is another one of those that's fairly unique to have an internal team actually put this together, present things to City Council, and go through that process. And it's ingrained into our organization. It's very much part of the organization. So this is one step, but we use it day in and day out and do our quarterly reviews, our annual reports, et cetera. Big deal. And I'm very proud of what Denise and her team has put together and everybody that's worked on it. So I want to give a shout-out to them.
Close public comment. Take it back to this council. Any other further discussion? Okay. Thank you very much, Denise. I'll echo Jim's comments. This is something that I believe strongly in. every year that this council goes through it. I think it's been a really good discussion. It's certainly provided me a lot of insight onto the priorities of our council members. And now having staff go back to the drawing board and really look at approaches and then see what that costs. Communities that plan well spend well, so every single time we can plan for the future, we know where our tax dollars are going. So it also helps provide that insight for our residents. So thank you for your very hard work and patience through this process. And I'm really excited about the end product. So I want to thank the council for all of their input. Great job. I'll entertain a motion to approve.
Motion, move approval.
Second.
Moved and seconded. And do you want to include that with the resolution?
I would put it on there just so that we can see it and remember it.
Is that okay with your motion?
Yes.
Okay.
Including Ms. Martin, the motion includes addition of the continuous lighting.
I'll call the question. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, it passes unanimously. Now move to consent agenda. Any member can speak on items on the consent agenda, either 10 or 11. Seeing none, I'll close that portion of our consent agenda, and I'll entertain a motion to approve items 10 and 11.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Moved and approved. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Seeing none, it passes unanimously. I'll move to public participation. Any member of the public wish to make public comment on items not on the agenda, please do so at this time. You have up to 3 minutes. Please state your name for the record, and your 3 minutes will begin following that. Seeing none, I'll close public comments. Discussion by City Council of matters not on the agenda. Councilmember Cuff.
One really for an update, and I can get it from staff, but it must be springing, but I continue to hear reports about raccoons acting strangely in areas around the city. And I know we brought this up a few weeks ago, and I don't know if there's any, whether that's just anecdotal or whether the staff's aware of it or has any further updates on.
I have not heard anything new about it, but once again, it's wildlife. We do not pick up wildlife, and the caution is just people need to stay away from all wildlife. They shouldn't be feeding them, etc. So, but I will ask Barbara if she's heard anything new and if there's any new activity out there that the state is involved in or anything. Get back to you.
That's. Raccoons is
I have nothing as well. So we will move to City Attorney of matters not on the agenda.
Well, just one comment. All of you, I think almost daily I get reports on what's going on up in Tallahassee, so I don't think it's just raccoons that are out there acting strangely this time of year. but I would ask and remind all of you that we do get our reports from the Florida League of Cities and the Florida Association of Counties about what's going on up there. And this is, I would characterize this year as the year of preemption or attempted preemption. Some pretty big things. Some pretty big things that are still floating around up there. And I know hopefully at the end it'll settle out so that we'll end where we started. But it's pretty scary to read some of the stuff that I get almost on a daily basis. So with that.
Wild, wild west. That's what I call it right now.
Okay.
It's interesting. Worst year I've ever witnessed in Tallahassee.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's an amazing read every
day. Yeah, I thought it had something to do with Friday being St. Patty's Day. Especially with the raccoons.
Well, only the green ones.
Fair enough. That's it, man.
Thank you. Mr. Landon, any matters not on the agenda you'd like to bring up?
Just a couple of announcements. We're kicking off our Food Truck Tuesday, a very popular event tonight, right here at the edge of Central Park. It starts at 5 and lasts till 8 o'clock. So it's the third Tuesday. Is this the third Tuesday? Yes, third Tuesday of every month throughout the summer. And then also, we are having a little special event here at City Hall. It's called Green City Hall. It's to celebrate our silver certification, LEED certification. It's an environmental certification that recognizes the fact that the City Hall was built and is maintained in an environmentally responsible way. Our first LEED certification, City Halls, there's only a handful in the whole state of Florida, so we're very proud of that. April 1st at 10 a.m. through 1 p.m., we're going to have a little celebration. Also, we're trying to use this as an opportunity to encourage our citizens to come out and take a look at City Hall. They didn't get a chance to look at it when we opened it. This would be kind of an open house, and they can get tours of City Hall. So the ceremony, the unveiling of the actual plaque is at 10:15. So hope to see you all here on April 1st. It's a Saturday. Mayor, that's all I have.
I don't want anybody to think I'm not green. I won't be able to be here on that day because it's been like 6 weeks since I've seen my grandbaby. So it takes precedence. I'm sorry.
You know how that goes.
Yes. Yeah. Vice Mayor.
Move to adjourn. Move to adjourn.